everything will happen in pure spinner superspace, which has been introduced this morning by Nathan. So this talk is coordinated together with Carlos Mafra, the next speaker. So I will introduce a lot of building blocks, a lot of polarization-dependent factors, which will later on reappear in the rigorous string calculations that Carlos is going to introduce. And I will try to convince you that these building blocks are equally valid to describe field theory amplitudes. Or putting it differently, there's a twofold benefit. If you study field theory well, then you might get a glimpse on what kind of kinematic variables are appearing in the superstring. So you already can anticipate what a good alphabet of building blocks is to express a string amplitude. And conversely, this is probably the more obvious part, if you know string theory well, then you can land on the field theory amplitudes like today, like in this talk, by taking the alpha prime to zero limit. Okay, the supergravity part of my talk is mostly relegated to these gentlemen, Bernd Carrasco and Johansson. So apologies ahead if the supergravity part is not taking much time here. I'll argue that based on their work, corresponding supergravity amplitudes more or less follow for free, since I'll give you the super Young-Mills amplitudes in a very peculiar form. Okay. So how do I intend to organize my super Young-Mills amplitudes? Essentially, it's an organization based on cubic graphs for both gauge and gravity amplitudes. So the notation for cubic graphs is capital gamma. Yeah, and in terms of those cubic graphs, I can write a G-loop endpoint super Young-Mills amplitude as follows. It's a G-fold loop integral. Oh, by the way, I try to be mostly dimension agnostic. Admittedly, my kinematic variables are from 10-dimensional superspace, but 10D is, if you wish, the mother of all gauge theories. You can at any time dimensionally reduce the components. And hopefully, we can someday do this dimensional reduction even at the superspace level. So for those who are interested in four-dimensional spinner helicity expressions, it's always doable. You can always extract the polarization vectors and feed in the helicity wave functions if you wish. But the advantage of pure spinner superspace is, among other things, that you are using the same expressions for all helicity sectors. So you won't need to specify whether it's MHV or very far away from that. Okay, now what do we have inside the loop integrand? Now this is the sum over all cubic graphs, which are compatible with the loop and leg order. And now for each diagram, we are having some Ni of L, some Ci, and in the denominator, a couple of propagators. So here these capital Ps, they just denote the propagators, which you can read off from the diagram structure. Then Ci is also trivial to read off. This is the color dependence. And in a cubic graph, each vertex can be dressed with a structure constant of the gauge group. So you can construct all the Ci's in an automated way, just stare at the graph and decorate the propagators, the vertices accordingly. Okay, and this structure constant happens to satisfy a Jacobi identity due to the Lie algebra structure. Whenever you have a contracted product of FABE and FECD, and you cycle that in A, B, and C, this three-term expression always vanishes, yeah, as a straightforward consequence from the Lie algebra structure behind. Good. What else is worth highlighting? Here, these Ni's, they are a global shorthand for everything that is not color. Namely, this is all the kinematic dependence, a kinematic numerator, where you have momenta, both the external ones and the loop momenta. And of course, this is where all the polarizations are sitting. And in this talk, they're going to be in terms of superfields. So let me write superpolarizations. Up to here, the statement could apply to any gauge or gravity theory, regardless of the amount of supersymmetry. But as I promised, all of this will happen in the maximally supersymmetric case, 16 superchargers for Young-Mills or 32 superchargers for supergravity. And a very nice consequence of this large supersymmetry is this graph sum is strongly constrained. So in case of maximal SUSY, you won't see any triangles or bubbles. That's a famous no triangle property, which implicitly includes the bubbles and the tadpoles. So that's the first benefit of the huge SUSY. The simplest diagram is going to be the box. And even more than that, the loop momentum dependence inside the numerator is strongly constrained by supersymmetry, namely in a M-gon subgraph, you have at most m minus 4 powers of L in the numerator. Therefore, the boxes won't depend on the loop momentum, and the pentagons, which I later on show, have 1 power of the loop momentum at most. Okay, this is the setting. And now let me come to this supergravity promise. According to Bernd Carrasco and Johansson, there's a very cute way how you can obtain gravity for free. But there is a crucial condition to be satisfied. The condition is, for each triplet of color tensors that vanishes because of the Jacobi identity, you can arrange the numerators such that they vanish inside the same triplet. So in other words, you can carry over the symmetry from the color side to the kinematic side for a clever choice of the NI. It won't work in all representations, but as soon as you find a representation where this is true for all triplets, then you get the corresponding gravity amplitude at G loops and points by performing a quite simple replacement. Kill all the color tensors and replace them by a second copy of the kinematic stuff, of the kinematic numerator, if it is in such a cute representation. Okay, that's why I won't need to spend much time on the gravity side. So what am I going to do? This talk will be strongly focused on these kinematic numerators. This is the only non-trivial part of that expression here, since color can be read off from the vertices and propagators can be read off from the edges of the graphs. And they will be expressed in the pure spinner superspace setting. Let me just remind you of the key features of pure spinner superspace. It's an extension of the standard 10-dimensional superspace by a bosonic spinner variable, which satisfies the pure spinner constraint. And to pick up the physical component out of such a pure spinner superspace expression, you need this measure, which has been discussed this morning. The measure being lambda cubed theta 5 equals to 1. The tensor structure was given by Nathan, and I don't even need to tell you because it's unique by group theory. Okay, so clearly this is very much string-inspired, and in particular, I will make use of the BRST invariants. The vertex operators are BRST invariant, and accordingly the string amplitudes will be, in particular, the alpha prime to zero limit, the corresponding field theory amplitude, will inherit this BRST invariance. And it turns out that this is a very strong constraint on the numerators as well, strong enough that with a bit of string inspiration, you can constructively get the numerators by just knowing what they have to do under the BRST variation. I'll shortly be more specific. And just to remind you, the BRST operator is a contraction of a pure spinner with a fermionic covariant derivative. It's, of course, squares to zero. Good. In order to get a BRST invariant amplitude here, well, Q only acts on the NI, but they won't be BRST invariant diagram by diagram. Each diagram can have a bit of BRST variation in a way that it can communicate with other diagrams that differ in their propagator structure. So as a necessary condition for BRST invariance, every numerator under Q has to cancel some of the propagators. Each summand in Q of the Ni to be determined, each summand has to contain one of the propagators. Otherwise, the diagrams couldn't talk to each other. Otherwise, we couldn't get a BRST closed amplitude. Okay, and the decoration of these propagators is mostly arbitrary with some superfield of ghost number 4. You'll shortly see examples. Okay, and this requirement on the numerator turns out to mostly suffice to infer the full-fledged expressions for the Ni. Okay, I need to supplement some sort of boundary conditions. I will take some selected aspects of the corresponding superstring amplitudes. It's not that you need the full glory of the technicalities of the superstring. I'll just use a couple of selected features. You'll shortly see what I mean. So in other words, the superstring inspires the alphabet in terms of which you should seek for these numerators here. They are clearly inspired by the string. But at the same time, when you want to do the string amplitude ultimately, it's a good exercise to start with a corresponding field theory limit to get the first feeling of the kinematic alphabet involved. So therefore, field theory is not only inspired by, but also it's valuable for the superstring calculation. And I guess you will fully see that in Carlos' talk, when he will use a lot of these building blocks that I'm about to introduce. Okay, and I really want to go into an explicit scenario to convince you that you can make certain amplitudes fully explicit. And the examples chosen are the following. We'll do 5 points at G equal 1 and 2. 4 points doesn't have a non-trivial BRST interplay. The 4-point amplitudes at 1-loop and 2-loop, they just have BRST closed diagrams, so you won't have a chance to appreciate this mechanism here. And I won't do 6-point and higher explicitly, but I'll give you a flavor of what kind of extra ingredients might enter at higher multiplicity. Good, and these 5-point examples, they turn out to come in this BCJ form. Without any facelifting, the string-inspired ingredients will land you in such a BCJ representation, such that you don't have any extra work to get the supergravity amplitude. It's just that identity up here. Okay, that's the summary of what's going to happen now. Any questions before I become more specific? Okay, I'll say a few words on tree level. Okay, right. Not too easy, but I try to devote most of the time for the loops. Yeah, you guessed correctly that the trees are an essential part of the discussion. In fact, my first section is called Trees. And this is an opportunity to introduce a technology called multiparticle superfields. Oops. We have systematically defined them in the April paper of last year. And it's a systematic method to perform OPEs in string theory. And the consequence for field theory is you never need to worry about a tree-level subdiagram. Even if you attach it to a loop skeleton, the trees are very good under control once you have this multiparticle superfields at your disposal. Let me briefly remind you of the superstring vertex operators. As you have seen it in Nathan's talk, there are two versions. First of all, the unintegrated vertex, which is a lambda alpha contracted with a spinorial superfield, depending on x and theta. And the corresponding integrated counterpart has 4 terms. 4 different conformal fields of weight 1 are contracted into a superfield of linearized super Young-Mills. Good. So these guys, theta, pi, d alpha, and n, these are H equal 1 Rorschach fields, whose OPEs you have seen in Nathan's talk. And the rest here, this A alpha, AM, WI, and FI, these are linearized superfields of 10-dimensional super Young nulls. And the BRST invariance of these vertex operators is tied to the equations of motion. So I didn't dare to write them down live here. That's why I cheated and prepared them beforehand. If you're surprised about this superscript here, all the numbers 1 refer to the fact that this is going to describe particle 1 in the scattering amplitude. And shortly, we'll come to a context where these superfields carry several particle labels. Okay, given that these linearized equations of motion hold, these two guys are BRST invariant. And in order to build up a non-trivial tree-level diagram, we have to do OPEs. So in a puristic string context, OPEs are going to create poles in the worldsheet variables if they are getting close to each other. So at first, you're generating poles in the differences, ci minus cj. But once you integrate them over the insertion points, these worldsheet singularities will translate into kinematic poles. And here's my convention for Mandelstam variables. Sij is just the dot product of momenta. Apologies for those who would prefer to see a factor of 2 here. Good. And now, given the explicit form of the vertex operators, we can just work out what happens if you bring two of the integrated vertices closely together. Okay. So first of all, there is a contribution from the plane waves. This is a term which you only see in string theory. And then the most singular term is again accompanied by conformal fields, namely the same H equal 1 conformal fields which you have seen above. Again, you will get some del thetas, you will get some pi's, you will get d alpha, and you will get the ghost Lorentz current, nmn. And the coefficients, which you can work out on the basis of the CFT data, well, for the moment, I just give them the names to remind you that they are sitting in the same position as in the one-particle vertex operators. So for the moment, this is just a name, A alpha with two particle labels. However, this terminology is well justified once you study the equations of motion satisfied by these two particle objects. It turns out that this is a quite straightforward generalization of the linearized super Young nulls equation. If you ask me about the d alpha of, say, the two-particle version of the spinner, then you first of all produce the two-particle vector. But on top of that, there's also some contact term. So I'll call it a contact term when you have the Mandelstam variable. Okay. So likewise here, the alpha of the two-particle vector translates into everything two particle labels. And something quite similar will happen below. I guess we don't need to spell it out. Oh, and shame on me, I forgot to point out, what is the explicit representation of these two particle building blocks? Well, as I said, you get them by performing the OPEs, which Nathan has mostly given to you. It's not a big miracle. It's just doing a careful bookkeeping of all the mutual singularities of the conformal fields. So you arrive at expressions of this form. So rule of thumb wise, order of magnitude 5 terms per two particle superfield. Sorry? Oh, so far I haven't introduced any color degrees of freedom. Maybe I should have put a generator of the gauge group at this position. But so far, all the superfields are color stripped. In a few minutes, you'll see another case where the color dependence is included.
Letters A1 and A2 commute. This is just numbers.
Commute all the anti-commute if they are Grassmann odd.
Okay.
Yeah, just numbers, exactly. Okay, and given that the modifications between one particle and two particle equations of motion is a contact term, we are led to interpret these guys as an external three-level subdiagram. Actually, I don't even need this the multiparticle equations of motion to argue for that. This three-level subdiagram is at the same time a cartoon of a string worldsheet when you bring these two guys close to each other. A cartoon of this worldsheet, how it degenerates when you study the alpha prime to zero limit. Okay, so just for to completeness, let me write down the name. These are the two particle superfields. And yeah, they are associated with this three-level subdiagram. Now, once this mechanism works at the two-particle level, it's tempting to iterate that. And it turns out that to include more particles, you don't need to redo the CFT calculation. If you want to add further particles, if you want to do the p-particle version, something like A alpha with 1, 2, dot, 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 p, and D2 for the others. You just iterate the formulas which are already there. So whenever you see an anti-symmetrization 1 versus 2 in these formulas, you promote this to a recursive rule like anti-symmetrize p minus 1 particles with the pth particle. So in more concrete terms, if you ask me for A alpha 1, 2, 3, then each appearance of A1 will be replaced by 1, 2, and each appearance of 2 will be replaced by 3. This lands you on a possible representation of the three particle fields. It's not a unique representation. You can even fine-tune them to satisfy more of the BCJ relations. But this is one admissible representation, and you can do a similar recursive procedure for the other three species of superfields. Okay, and the three-level subdiagrams, which we described with these p-particle fields, is just a half-ladder diagram. And each of the vertices reminds you of one such recursion step. Okay, so whenever we want to describe a loop diagram where one of these is sitting in the external corners, then you can be sure that the numerator will involve some combinations of these multiparticle superfields. Now, at the moment, this just looks like a nice tool to quickly construct numerators for complicated trees. But let me clarify what these guys are conceptually doing. Conceptually, they are taking care of the nonlinearities in the Super-Young-Mills theory. I mean, we have constructed the vertex operators from the linearized, the solutions to the linearized equations of motion. And in order to upgrade this to the nonlinear solutions, you need to resum those multiparticle superfields. So the generating series solves the nonlinear equations of motion. And by generating series, I mean the following thing. You first of all start with the one-particle superfields, and now you dress them with color. This probably answers Andre's question. In this generating series, we insert some gauge group generators. So this becomes non-commutative. And at the two-particle level, you sum over all the two-particle fields divided by the Mandelstam pole, and you adjoin this with a matrix product, with a non-commutative matrix product, Ti, Tj. And if you additionally use the symmetries of these guys in I and J, you will find that you can always write this in terms of nested commutators. So these guys, or this entire series will really sit inside the Lie algebra and not only in the universal enveloping algebra. Okay, the last term I'm going to make explicit is at three-particle level. So here you might wonder what the hell makes me combine these two different pole configurations? So this arrangement here is, if you wish, a color-dressed four-point, a color-ordered four-point amplitude. It's combining an S-channel diagram with a T-channel diagram, where the fourth particle is the dot, 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 the off-shell line, which you can later on glue onto some corners of a loop or a tree. So these are really quite flexible devices that can appear at any loop order in perturbation theory. And of course, the same rule of generating series applies to the other species of superfields, ditto for AM, W alpha, and F MN. Okay, but I should admit, for the rest of the talk, when we discuss the loops, this is slightly overshooting. For the concrete 5-point one-loop and two-loop amplitudes, I only need a two-particle version. This part was simply meant to tell you what the conceptual meaning of these objects is. Good, this finishes what I wanted to say about the trees. I would next give examples at one loop. My disclaimer was, we'll take a little bit of inspiration from the superstring. And specifically, I would like to recall you the four-point superstring kinematic factor, in its minimal pure spinner representation. It was given by Nathan in, I think, 2004. Is that right? So it's the 4-point one-loop open superstring amplitude is some Wellschmidt integral, and you can pull out a global kinematic factor. And this global kinematic factor is, first of all, an unintegrated vertex. And now, some BRST invariant combination of the other superfields, two W's, and a field strength F. And it has the right mass dimension to describe not only a color-ordered tree, but there are enough derivatives to produce additional Mandelstam variables. So this identity holds if you evaluate the bosonic or fermionic components. Then you basically land on the corresponding Bose-Fermi components of the Young-Mills tree. And it was proven in superspace, this is true, I guess, in Carlos's paper, January 2008, right? Okay, very good. Yeah, now the kinematic factor here factorizes, first of all, an unintegrated vertex and then something else. And it turns out, bless you, that both of them are separately BRST closed. For this part, you need the pure spinner constraint in various guises, say lambda 3 form, lambda is 0, and a similar identity for the Q action on F4. So this is a very nice tensor structure, which we should recycle for higher multiplicity. So given this neat expression for the 4-point amplitude, I would like to promote it to a multiparticle building block. Namely, I want to define a building block that takes three multiparticle slots as an input. Oh yeah, I should have warned you, I will use this shorthand notation. If I want to refer to all of these indices at the same time, I use the notation of a multiparticle label, capital A, capital B, capital C, and so on. Okay, and what this building block T does, it combines three of these multiparticle fields. Multiparticle W, and another one, and the third one. And let's symmetrize in A, B, and C. It turns out that the non-symmetric part is, in some sense, BRST exact. So the only meaningful component is this one. Okay, if the single particle case is BRST closed, using the single particle equations of motion, then you can probably guess what happens if I decorate it with multiparticle fields. they have additional contact terms in their multiparticle equations of motion. And accordingly, Q of a two-particle case will be non-zero. Instead, you produce a Mandelstam and some simpler version of what you started with. You pull out an unintegrated vertex, and then you reproduce the same TABC structure with fewer particles. So the clue is that the right-hand side has the same structure as the left-hand side, something which we like to call BRST covariant. Therefore, these objects are quite suitable to construct BRST invariants by combining various diagrams, by combining various pole structures. Okay, now let me tell you how they actually enter the super Young-Mills amplitudes. It turns out that this is almost the most general box numerator. The only thing you need to additionally do is decorate it with a multiparticle version of the unintegrated vertex, defined as lambda alpha times the multiparticle A alpha superfield. So here, in this configuration, I have ghost number 3 as required, and I cover 4 tree-level subdiagrams, which I can associate with the box A, B, C, and D. And somewhere the momentum, the loop momentum is flowing. As I told you before, in box numerators, we don't expect any L dependence, so it's perfectly okay to associate the box numerator with a scalar building block. Yeah, and please recall that each of these blobs at the corner, they represent a tree-level subdiagram that might look like this, A1, A2, with all the letters of the word A being distributed along a half-letter diagram. Okay, and with this picture in mind, one can really check. Q of this object will contain exclusively contact terms. So this numerator here satisfies the general criterion which we formulated before, that every summand cancels one of the propagators. By the way, it only cancels the external propagators in the tree and will leave the loop inert, but it must be this way, otherwise you would need triangles to compensate for that. So up to the box level, everything looks sane. Let me go to the pentagon, just to give you a flavor how you can increase the number of corners. I won't give an exhaustive classification of all n-gons, but I guess the pentagon is good to illustrate a quite generic mechanism. Starting from the pentagon, we will need to have an L dependence in the numerator, a linear one at most. So I need to tell you which superfield to contract into the loop momentum. And the superfield is determined with a little bit of stringy input, but mostly guided by the BRST variation. It should better satisfy. So let me start with a part that is fixed by a rule of thumb string calculation. The scalar TABC is somewhat the result of a zero mode analysis, if you don't saturate any zero modes of the pi field. But the loop momentum is essentially the zero mode of the world sheet field pi. And the coefficient of that pi m field in the vertex operator is the vector. Therefore, it's natural to have a term like this. And it doesn't matter from which slot you extract the zero mode of pi. Therefore, I symmetrize here. Good, that's part number one. But ultimately, we want to have a decent BRST variation, a covariant one, as before. So let me first write down the wish list before I give you the rest. Our wish list is that we want to have the vector index on an external momentum. And otherwise, we want to see superfields that we have already seen before. So that's the desired BRST variation. And when you hit that stuff with Q, you will realize that we are not yet there. We need a little bit of facelifting. And the right answer to facelift is still simple enough to write it down here. It's a three form where the free vector index is sitting on one of these gammas here. And from the rest, you won't get any BRST variation. Okay, and all of this needs to be symmetrized. Okay, there are two ways of arriving at this superfield. First of all, just demand that the BRST variation is this. Then you can basically reconstruct that thing by knowing its desired Q variation. But also, you can get it explicitly if you enter the details of a string calculation. And you will see in Carlos' talk that the B ghost, the loop amplitudes, mostly contributes two zero modes of D alpha, but sometimes it's a different contribution. This is coming from the less usual B ghost sector, where it contributes a pi field and a D alpha field. So there's a way to support that expression by an exact string calculation. Good, now we have all the ingredients on the blackboard in order to write down the pentagon numerator. So let me tell you what superfield expression I want to associate with this diagram here. Let's say the loop momentum is between particle 5 and 1. So accordingly, this is L minus K1, L minus K1 minus K2, L minus K1 minus K2 minus K3. I guess the notation is obvious. Okay, and the numerator associated with this guy, first of all, it should better involve this vectorial building block in contraction with the L. But we also want to reflect the symmetries of the diagram in the numerator. There is a reflection axis through here, and accordingly, I want to average over the loop momenta, let's say L, together with the image of L under this reflection. So I'm taking the sum of Lm and the momentum over there. Good. So this is essentially the L-dependent part. But of course, there's going to be an additional scalar pentagon. And the scalar, I can reverse engineer this in the same way as I did it here. We already have a very precise idea what the Q variation is going to be. Oops. So the overall pentagon numerator should have a Q which goes roughly like that. Some stuff which you have seen before. And now we have to cancel the L-dependent propagators, because this has no tree-level subdiagrams. The only propagators I can cancel are those where L is flowing. And from this vectorial part written down here, the only choices of L compatible with that is as follows. This V2, T3, 4, 5 is accompanied by the momenta in the neighboring lines, the two edges which are adjacent to particle 1, which is sitting in the V here. So there are three other terms with almost the same structure. Just want to make sure that everything is explicit, but there are no surprises. Okay. Good. So from this, we can easily reconstruct the missing scalar part. In order to land on this L configurations, we have no other choice than adding V1. T, 2, 3, 4, 5, and six copies of box numerators where the plus minus sign configuration tells you about the ordering of the external legs. So if I want to get from this pentagon to a permutation in the external legs, then I just have to fiddle around with the plus minus signs here. But the structure is pretty universal. You can always arrange the plus minus signs such that you get the propagators of your choice in the queue. Okay, now you have seen the most general box numerator, and you have seen the simplest pentagon numerator. In view of the no triangle property, this allows you to assemble the full-fledged 5.1 loop amplitude. And with the ingredients here, you can find the sum over all diagrams vanishes under Q. And also, if you compare the numerators associated with quite similar diagrams, it turns out that all the BCJ relations are satisfied. We didn't impose the BCJ relations, but they just came out observationally. So therefore, we can apply the trick over there and get the supergravity, one loop, 5-point amplitude, without further work. By just squaring, say, the box numerators, I'm giving you two examples. Or you take squares of the pentagon numerators, including their L dependence, of course. So internally, we have this rule of thumb. If you have a BRST invariant quantity that has the right pole structure to describe a certain amplitude, then in almost all cases we considered so far, it is the answer. So the fact that your BRST invariant and assemble all the diagrams fills us with great confidence that it's the correct answer. But just to be extra safe, we have compared this, and indeed, it's supported by the alpha prime limit, by the alpha prime to zero limit of the corresponding string amplitude. Okay, so here in this 5-point setting, it turns out that the string naturally lands you on a BCJ representation. Yeah, that concludes what I wanted to say about one loop. Are there any questions before I go to two loops? Oh, sorry about that. Good. Yeah, it turns out that the two-loop discussion is pretty analogous, so I spend most of the time wiping out from now on. At two loops, we can again start from the superstring kinematic factor for the two-loop four-point amplitude to see the starting point, the starting point of all the building block machinery. So this was again given by Nathan. This time it was a 2005 paper. And the two-loop kinematic factor needs to have a higher mass dimension. So you need a lot of field strengths, Fn, Fpq, F3rs. So if you do a careful counting of the derivatives in this expression, you will find that the mass dimension is slightly higher as before. It's one more power of Mandelstam. So that's the answer if you expand it in components, as has been firstly done in 2006 by Carlos and Nathan. Okay, I'm suppressing the additional superstring ingredients. So in the string answer, you additionally have some antisymmetric bidifferentials, some contractions of the holomorphic one forms with two-dimensional epsilon tensors.
This formula does what? Why this expression?
Okay. So on the left-hand side, you have a BRST closed superfield, a power series in theta. And if you extract the component lambda cube theta 5, then you will land on polarization vectors and fermionic wave functions the same way as you get it from the color ordered tree times some extra Mandelstam variables. So as soon as you have the answer in superspace, by now it's even automated in a paper by Carlos. So let's say once you have this expression and check for yourself that it's BRST closed, then this is the answer, then the problem is solved. Okay. Now, from this, we can define a multi-particle building block. Let's say we can replace all the single particle fields by the multi-particle counterparts. And the result of doing this, again, we use the capital letter T, but now the symmetry pattern is a little bit more subtle. So we have to pay attention here how we symmetrize with respect to the external labels. Okay, so here the right symmetrization pattern is take the phi form, contracted in a multiparticle field strength, Mn, detour with Pq, and finally, a symmetrized combination of Fc, Rs, and so with these round brackets, I want to instruct you to symmetrize in C and D. And on top of that, we symmetrize in the exchange of AB versus CD. So I hope this is not confusing. What this is meant to do is symmetrize separately in those two. And finally, after having symmetrized within the brackets, you also symmetrize with respect to the two brackets.
Symmetrize in momentum.
Sorry?
In momentum.
In A and B or in C and D. Say, if you want to put three particles here, four particles there, five and six, then you just symmetrize in the distributions of the multiparticle slot to these parental superfields. Okay, and once again, the appealing feature of this definition is, given that the single particle case is BRST invariant, the multiparticle version is BRST covariant. So if we insert one two-particle label and otherwise keep it at single particle level, then you get one Mandelstam variable from the multiparticle case, and you peel off an unintegrated vertex while maintaining the structure of the rest. So this is once more a BRST covariant transformation on the Q. Now, the field theory intuition behind that is, this time, we are not describing a single box, but we are describing the numerator of a double box. So the most general double box numerator is claimed to be capital T AB slash CD. And yeah, I haven't commented on the role of this vertical bar. This is meant to map to the separation of the two boxes. So we have two independent loop momenta now. And all the multiparticle slots left of the vertical bar, they are referring to one of the two boxes. And C and D sitting on the right of the vertical bar refers to the different world line branch here on the other side of the double box. And given the symmetry of this diagram around this axis, up to relabeling the integration variables, that's the moral reason why we want to keep the things symmetrized in AB versus CD. So that's essentially the field theory intuition. Oh yeah, and you might notice, given the explicit component form, this agrees with the double box numerator by Bern et al. In the field theory literature. The double box for the S channel is given by T8 tensor times another S12. Okay, that's the story for the double boxes at two loops. They are conjecturally given to all multiplicity like that. Now we have to work a little bit harder to deal with the L dependence. So this time, the simplest laboratory for an L-dependent numerator is the penta box. So once again, we need to seek a vectorial superfield such that it qualifies to contract the loop momentum. And we again need to refine the symmetry pattern. Let me start by correcting the diagram we want to describe. So the target diagram of this endeavor is looking like that. With some loop momentum sitting here, this is L minus K1, L minus K12, L minus K123. And on a different world line branch, there is sitting, say, particle 4 and 5. And it doesn't even matter whether we are describing single particle or multiparticle corners. The structure of the vectorial building block is a universal one. You make a big vertical bar to separate the two world line branches. And only in the pentagonic branch, you adjoin the AM field. Since AM, in stringy language, is the companion of the loop momentum. And we only have an active loop momentum on the pentagonic branch. So we take a scalar building block times the A vector and symmetrize over the insertion points in the pentagonic world line branch. Good, and with this, we are already pretty close to the desired BRST variation. What we're gonna wanna get is vector index and an external momentum, and then reproducing the scalar building block. So this is the wish list. And we are in the same situation as before. As it stands, this expression is not quite there, but you need to add in a contribution from the different BGOS sector. I think you will see the fully honest-to-God stringy counterpart in Carlos' talk later on. So here you need a completion by a vectorial building block that has, say, more W fields. And just to make you see that it's explicitly known, the expression for that W vector field is given like that in the single particle cases. And it's no problem to promote the single particle labels for two multi-particle ones. Okay, just to assure you, this is not a monster. This is a known expression, and you can get it. You can construct it from the desired BRST variation. Okay, so this is the two-loop vector building block. This is its BRST variation. Now it's time to give you the numerator for the pentabox. So this time, I should adapt my terminology a bit. Let me make a superscript for the loop order, and let me make vertical bars to highlight the separation of world line branches. Good. As before, we should imprint the symmetries of the diagram into the numerator. So this time, the reflection axis goes through the center of the pentagonic branch. So we should symmetrize, so we should average over this momentum and the one up there. Okay, and this contracts into T1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then we get a scalar completion, which follows from the desired BRST variation. So from what you know of the vector building block so far, the only sensible BRST variation we can land on is the following. Please notice that legs 4 and 5 are spectators in all the terms. Okay. And now the scalar completion. To really land on the desired BRST variation, it's quite similar to the previous case. You include some combinations of the double box numerators with a massive corner, yeah, such that these guys' BRST variation resonates with the vector. It's even simpler here with respect to the combinatorics, since we are having three terms rather than six terms from the one-loop counterpart. So if you constrain your alphabet to be nothing but T vector and T scalar, then you have no other choice. Good. Now I'm almost at the point to claim victory in view of the BRST analysis. However, there's one subtlety at two loops which we didn't have at one loop. It's about the non-planar diagrams. Oh, there should be one more blackboard, I hope. Right. So as another feature of two loops, we have non-planar graphs. And I also need to give you numerators for those. And here, we make an educated guess based on the BCJ duality. Let's say this time we put it in by hand. We hope to arrive at the BCJ satisfying representation. So let us check whether the BCJ induced answer is compatible with BRST closure. Good, and the BCJ bookkeeping of the two-loop five-point amplitude has been nicely done in June 2011. I should have highlighted this paper a little bit earlier on. This paper has been studying BCJ satisfying representations of four-dimensional amplitudes using spinner helicity brackets to capture the kinematics, even though there are subtle differences about four-dimensional Gram determinants, which prevented us from directly uplifting those representations to 10D. But let's say the bookkeeping of BCJ relations is one-to-one the same, so we simply stole or copied the technology for non-planar graphs. And the statement of this paper about a double pentabox is the following. This diagram here should be associated with a sum of two planar pentabox numerators. You should use a superposition of a pentabox numerator adapted to this pentagon subdiagram. And please add an image where you somehow change the role of 1, 2 versus 3, 4. And of course, don't forget to also swap the loop momenta. So that's the unique answer if you insist on satisfying BCJ. And now this was the moment of truth. If you do all of this for the non-planar graphs, what happens with the overall Q? And luckily, it works. Luckily, if you represent all the diagrams using the methods shown, then the total answer turns out to be BRST closed. And this time, it's almost by construction, or yeah, mostly by construction. The numerators once more satisfy all the BCJs. So you've computed at the same time the two-loop five-point supergravity amplitude. From squaring the massive double box numerators, or likewise from squaring the pentabox numerators spelled out here. Good. Again, it feels even better to get support from the superstring. For this purpose, we need a representation of the five-point amplitude, which is not yet published. That's why I should better add a disclaimer in progress. But the unofficial answer is yes, it works. It descends from the world line limit of this of the 5.2 loop string amplitude. Good. I hope I'm not running into time trouble. I still want to say a few words on higher loop speculations. But the following three loop statements are on much more shaky grounds as compared to what I said so far. Okay, let me be quite clear that all of this is so far speculation. Ideally, we would have loved to start from a kinematic factor in string theory, but this one is only available in non-minimal formalism, the calculation from Humberto and Carlos. So we wanted to accelerate the approach a bit and start from a building block in the minimal representation. And a superficial obstacle is you've already exhausted the mass dimensions in the two-loop numerator. The two-loop numerator ought to be of the dimension d squared f to the fourth. And as you can see, it's already on the highest mass dimension superfield which we discussed so far. Three copies of f, one copy of w. There is no way to increase mass dimension with the currently available alphabet. So I need to enlarge that alphabet. And we need to do this in a BRST covariant way. So we need the so-called higher mass dimension superfields. And what you do is, essentially, you add derivatives to, say, the fermionic field strength. And you do this in a covariant way. So the differential operator to go for is the connection, partial minus the corresponding gauge field. Maybe I missed to highlight so far. The full nonlinear version of the Super-Young-Mills equations of motion are most elegantly written in terms of these connections, nabla. And indeed, these nabla connections are the covariant way of adding more and more momenta of increasing the mass dimension of the multiparticle building blocks. Good. What is the net effect of this nabla? Well, in the one-particle case, you won't see it. In the one-particle case, it's just multiplying by momentum, nothing exciting at all. But this AM part will start to hit you in the two-particle instance. So here, you don't get away by just multiplying by the overall momentum. But on top of that, you will get a contact term, which picks up here these nonlinearities. And yeah, here's the entire generating series, so you can immediately grab the higher order friends. Okay, now that the microscopic level of the alphabet is settled, I should go for the next macroscopic step and introduce some conjectural building blocks to you. Okay, the building blocks per se are not conjectural. The statements about the building blocks are solid, but where my conjectures kick in is, what diagram do they describe? So now I will write down a building block, which we conjecture describes the most general Mercedes star. That's one out of the two world line topologies at three loops, and we believe that this diagram is described by a numerator. With this vertical bar, the notation, I want to separate the three world line branches, and we believe that the right superfield is essentially a trilinear in these W vector alpha. And the Lorentz indices are just contracted in a cyclic way. Okay, and make sure you anti-symmetrize. Good. And certainly this conjecture is supported by BRST covariants. And a second conjecture is, if we want to describe a tennis court diagram, start from the Mercedes star topology, and on one world line branch, you make two insertions. So this topology gives rise to a pentagonic subdiagram, so you should expect an L dependence. And we hope that here the numerator is given by the following expression. You start with the average loop momentum in the pentagonic branch, and you contract that with a vectorial building block. So as before, you get this from the scalar building block by adjoining a vector superfield, which comes from the zero modes on the world sheet. And you need to make a BRST phase lifting and add another superfield, which is explicitly known here. So this is a relatively harmless expression, which BRST covariantizes the vector building block. Yeah, and as a reward, or let's say the support for the conjectures, comes from BRST covariants. First of all, the Mercedes star conjecture is supported by this scalar BRST transformation. And the tennis court numerator looks like on the right track, as you can see from this expression here. Yeah, it's basically the same story as before. The only reason why we are pretty careful is, first of all, we are not yet sure what to do with the other world line topology. We are not yet sure which numerator to assign to this diagram. It looks like one should work with a BRST invariant, and unfortunately, it's in the heart of our method to work with BRST covariant objects. So our method has more difficulties to describe an object which is per se invariant. So that's why we need some additional input, probably some unitarity properties. So this is our current bottleneck. If one of you has an idea, please approach us. Any input and advice is cordially appreciated. Okay, but to close with a rather optimistic comment, you see that given the method of multiparticle superfields, generating series, and this Nabla representation, one can even more increase the mass dimension. So we can even construct numerators of mass dimension d to the 6, f to the 4th, and this would be the dimension you expect at four loops. So there is a speculation at for loops, but we hope that the following diagram here can be covariantly or supersymmetrically described as follows. Take a five form, similar to what you saw at two loops, then add a much higher mass dimension superfields. So this one has three more derivatives as compared to the three loop friend, and contract the remaining indices like that, plus 1, 2 versus 3, 4. So that's, let's say, some initiating work to apply this formalism to for loops. And again, it might be more difficult to sort out the less obvious world line topologies. So here, we probably will need some unitarity input or increase the understanding of the higher loop string amplitudes. Okay, so this finishes what I wanted to say. Sorry for overdoing a bit, and thanks for your patience. Whoa. well, let's say there are a lot of problems related to the divergences in the pure spinner integration, as you have seen this morning. Suppose I pretend blindness to all of this. It would be tempting to work with one single copy of a multiparticle superfield, but this is a very, very naive first step, and I would strongly expect that something essential gets missed if we stick to that. So I prefer to say mostly an open problem. Andrei?
If you derive some formal solution, you presented some formal solution of Yang-Mills equation based on those multiparticle states which were derived from OPEs of open string.
Exactly.
Can you use this OPEs to prove from them, to derive from them that that formal solution satisfies?
Okay, now we don't use the OPE in order to do that. I mean, we have full control over Q of the multiparticle superfields themselves.
Did you guess this formula or derived
it? Which formula?
Which you erased. The formula of the formal solution.
Okay, so this is just the definition. This is what it is.
It has plus dot dot dot, right?
Oh, yeah, right. So actually, a neater way to write this formula is in terms of Berensky-Le currents. Berensky-Le currents are some recursive objects, color-ordered amplitudes, where one leg is off-shell. And let me give you one sample how the Berensky-Le currents have a BRST transformation. So here I'm using a curly A to denote the Berensky-Le version. So this one contains many diagrams and many propagators. And it turns out that it simply deconcatenates under the BRST variation. So it just deconcatenates into two copies of what you started with. Just need to contract the indices appropriately. Alpha, beta, lambda, alpha, lambda, beta. So in this Berensky-Le language, it's quite straightforward to prove that they are indeed a solution to the nonlinear equations of motion. I hope I understand your question correctly. One way of getting those more abstractly is, suppose you want to discuss the outcome of this OPE without doing the calculation. You could do the following. Let's say this produces some building block, and you can get its BRST variation without determining it. You hit U2 with Q, producing del V2. And by the chain rule, del can be written as this one. And now the pi M field is the only participant in the OPE. The pi M field will produce a K1. So as a result of all that, you can predict that the Q variation must involve S12, V1, V2. So this you can already determine on more abstract grounds. And of course, you can iterate this argument to longer building blocks.
I don't believe there is no derivation of the formal
function. Sorry, what is the point where you are unhappy about the...
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's where behind, let's thank Oliver again.